Welcome to season 3 of You're Not Alone with Tansen. My name is Tansen, and if you've followed my journey, you know that I'm not only a musician, but I'm also a mental health advocate. I use my platform to help spread awareness, love, build community, and simply help people feel less alone in their struggles. In the last couple of years, I've had the chance to interview people from all over the world about a huge variety of mental health topics, and I cannot thank each of you enough for helping us continue to shine a light on the world. Every other week this season, we're bringing you the best interviews we've had. Make sure to like and follow this podcast if you're enjoying it. And if you want to keep up with everything we've got going, follow us on socials at Tansen T Music. Hope you enjoy. What is up, everybody? Welcome to this episode of You're Not Alone with Tansen. I, of course, am your host, Tansen. I'm so excited. Today, I've got one of my friends. His name is Jordan. I, of course, ran across him on social media, and I'd been seeing his stories for many, many months now. We tried to schedule something a long time ago, and the timing just didn't work. But we finally made it work, and I'm so, so honored to have him on here. Today, we're going to be talking about something called apraxia, which just incredibly is interesting to me. Something super cool that Jordan does is he'll talk about his diagnosis very openly on social media. He'll explain it to people. Something that I love is that you talk about what does and what doesn't work. And I think that's incredibly important, especially for other people that have this or anyone with children that are trying to go to speech therapy or anything like that. So I love what you do. And thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you.
Okay, so tell us, I always like to have my guests introduce themselves a little bit. So who is Jordan? Anything you want to share? You can talk about your age, where you're located, what your job is.
Yeah. So who is Jordan is a question I'm still trying to figure out to this day. I'm just playing. But it is, my name is Jordan Lee Van. I'm 26. And so I'm from Greensboro, North Carolina. I was born and raised here in North Carolina. And I am a person who has childhood apraxia of speech. And from my life experiences and like trials of adversity and such, I made the decision when I was around 21, 22 to make social media pages under the blog name Fighting for My Voice, where I talk very openly about my diagnosis of childhood apraxia of speech and what it's been like so far, and then also just talking about my everyday life. So I'm an advocate. I'm also an author. I've written the book series called Jordan's World, which is a non-fictional children's book series about my life growing up with my speech diagnosis. I just wrote my fourth book in my new series called Jordan's Journeys, called A Not So Silent Christmas. But of course, Christmas time has passed now, but I absolutely loved coming out with the book. And I do a lot of different things because I feel like as an advocate, you can never pick and choose which area of life a person's diagnosis might affect them, because it can affect in so many different areas within their life. So I've also, within the meantime, I have founded a 501c3 nonprofit called the Apraxia Foundation Hearing All Voices, where we help individuals with childhood apraxia, speech, and other related communication disorders afford speech services in the form of grants, and AAC, that stands for Alternative and Augmentative Communication, that can help people voice their basic wants, thoughts, and needs through technology. So there's a lot of different things I've dived into, but the goal within all of these things is, of course, to help people. So everything has that surrounding focus.
That is so cool. I had no idea you had written books. I might have to look into that. I love that so much. Okay, so how old were you when you got the diagnosis of apraxia?
I was 5. So prior to age 5, we definitely knew that I had speech differences. because I didn't say my first word until I was five. I can make some sounds when I was younger as I grew within my toddler years, but they were very inconsistent. So I was around age five when we first found out.
So you were talking about when you were younger, you knew there was a little bit of a difference, but when you went to school, could you tell there was a difference? Like, how did that feel when you were five and in elementary school? Did you notice something was going on, or how'd that feel to you?
Yeah, so I didn't really know prior into getting into elementary school. I mean, prior to that, I always knew that I had more to say than what I was physically able to. And I wasn't really exposed to many of my same age peers as much prior to elementary school. So like, I might have saw like a few kids like from my church, but not the amount of people that I saw within my kindergarten year. And that's when it really got it pointed out to me. Like, kids would ask me like, why do you talk like that? Are you speaking a different language? In which country are you from? So from those things, it was very clear that there was a difference. And then that's when it really hit me like, oh, not that there was something going on, but there is absolutely something different.
Interesting. That's so, I laugh because it's, I feel like that's so common for young kids. Their question is, where are you from? Anybody that sounds different, it's always, where are you from? Which is such an innocent question. And I love kids really are just, is. Yeah, kids are just curious and they want to know. And usually I have found when you're just straight with a kid and you say, well, they have a difference because they're like, okay, and they move on. But I love that they asked you, where are you from? What country are you from? That's so sweet.
Yeah. Yeah, because it's with those questions, like those questions were never intended on being mean, even though they might have affected me. Like now as an adult, like I look back and I'm like, kids just was trying, they were trying to make sense of what they didn't know, because many kids didn't know. So they were like, what country are you from? Because they're trying to put two and two together. So I definitely look back on like, because that was like pure like childhood innocence.
Right. Yeah. No, I totally could see in the moment that would devastate me and hurt my feelings. But like you said, as an adult looking back, you're like, oh, they're just trying to figure it out. I had a girl one time that talked about how she wasn't able to say certain letters correctly. So her R's, she had a lisp real bad and she wasn't able to say her R's. And so kids would say, oh my gosh, what was it like growing up in Australia? She's like, I'm not Australian. And she could never put it together. But as an adult, she goes back and laughs about it. But so speaking of being in elementary and kids trying to figure it out, do you feel like it affected you in school? And do you feel like it affected your social situations, like making friends and things like that?
Absolutely. It is with school for me. School was really difficult for me growing up because if I couldn't say what I wanted to say, then like if I had questions like about like my coursework or if I didn't understand like a certain concept, like I wasn't able to ask and I wasn't able to get that clarification. So it was really difficult within that sense. And then also with apraxia, it also affected my reading and spelling as well. Because if I couldn't pronounce the words, then I didn't know basically which letter made which sound because I couldn't pronounce those sounds. And with the different words, and when I would try to spell words, I would spell words like how I would pronounce them, which was a totally opposite, you know, what came out was totally different than what I was intending to say. So it definitely affected me within the academic sense with like reading, spelling, not being able to ask for help. And I did notice that it did definitely affect me socially. I was really bullied growing up due to my speech difference. And there were kids, as we were talking about, who were not intending to be mean. So, like, as we were talking about with, like, what country are you from and such, like, even from that age, even though, like, it did hurt my feelings, I knew that kids were not intending to be mean then. Like, I knew that, even though it did hurt, I was like, I know that they're not intending to, because they were never, like, mocking me, or they were never laughing at me. Like, they were purely asking questions, and they have, like, a nice, you know, facial expression. But then there were kids that did mock me and did, you know, laugh at me and would ask me to say certain words. And so it did definitely affect me socially in that aspect, and then also socially with trying to make friends, because I was always a kid who really wanted to make friends, and I always really craved to have a really big group of friends, because I've always been a social person. Even though I might be an introvert at my core, I still love talking to people. I still love getting to know people. And I did have friends growing up that definitely I did make friends with, that really did stick by my side. But if I'm honest, just being like with what I wanted as a child, like, I did want a big group of friends. I wanted to be friends with everybody, with everybody if I could have, which I think every kid wants to a certain degree. But it was just simply some people didn't want to speak to the boy who couldn't talk back. And that's just kind of what it boiled down to.
Oh, God, that makes me want to cry thinking about sweet little Jordan, or any kid, like anyone being bullied, which is exactly why I love these conversations and I love what you do, because a lot of it is just being aware that people are different. We're all different in some way, shape, or form, and talking about it. And, you know, even as adults, people hearing this conversation are like, oh, that's what that is. And then we move on. I hate that you had those experiences, but I love that it's made you who you are today and that you're making a difference. But since we're talking about it, let's go ahead and define apraxia. What actually is apraxia? Are you enjoying this conversation? This project is funded by patrons and sponsors. So if you like what you hear and you'd like to help us continue changing lives in 2024, we would love to have you join the family. Reach out to us at townsendtmusic@hotmail.com if you'd like to be a sponsor, or hop on patreon.com/townsendtmusic to join the patron family. As a thank you, you're going to receive extra podcast questions and content every episode, discounts, exclusive content, and so much more. So join the family and let's continue changing lives.
So childhood apraxia of speech is a neurological speech difference that basically affects you being able to move your tongue, lips, and jaw whenever you want to say the different words and phrases you want to say. So basically, between the brain and the mouth, there's a disconnection, and that disconnection can basically get in the way of you saying different words that you want to say, or different sounds, different phrases, and different things like that. So this is a speech difference that is present since birth. So I've had childhood apraxia of speech my whole life. When I was first diagnosed, I was classified as a profound case of childhood apraxia. Now, how they classify me would be a mild case of apraxia, but it really depends on, like, the different social situations I'm in, how my speech is that day, because apraxia is known for inconsistent speech and voicing errors. So it might be the ability to say one word, one phrase, one moment, and then the next, not being able to say that word or phrase like how you would like to say it or at all. And this is what really makes childhood apraxia really different than what you would label like a speech delay, because it's not something that simply like gets better with age or as you grow. You do have to have the research evidence-based treatment of speech therapy utilizing a motor planning approach in order to make gains by ASHA. So treatment is very, very crucial.
Okay. So you know what you want to say, your mouth and your tongue and all those things just won't cooperate.
Right. Okay. Absolutely.
Okay. So how common is apraxia of speech?
Oh my goodness. I wish that I could pull up the statistic. It was in 1 in every 2 kids or 1 in every 2 kids out of 1,000, I believe, and I can double check that, will have childhood apraxia of speech. So it's actually as prevalent, if that's how you say that word, as Down syndrome. But childhood apraxia of speech was not recognized until 2007 by ASHA, the American Speech and Hearing Association. But apraxia has been real for a very long time, but it was not classified until 2007. So we're actually finding that more people than what we think do have childhood apraxia of speech.
That blows my mind. That's not been that long ago.
No, it's kind of scary, if I'm honest, because I was diagnosed in 2002.
Wow. So
prior to ASHA ever recognizing it, like, I was fortunate enough that the SLP I was treated by knew that childhood apraxia of speech was real, even though the field might have been saying, well, we think it's real. And then another group of the field was like, we don't think this is a real diagnosis. It's very real.
Wow. Oh my goodness. I had no idea that it was that recently researched and, you know, put on the scale. Well, they were like, okay, this is a real thing. That blows my mind. Okay. So since they've done research since 2007 and everything, do they know how it's caused? Is it hereditary? Is it genetic?
There's 3 different causes that we know during this time. So one, they have found a genetic portion. So genes can contribute. The second is brain injury or trauma to the brain. And then the third one is idiopathic, which basically means we don't know what caused it. So it's kind of funny they say that's a cause, because I'm like, well, we don't know what the cause is.
Yeah. But it's the scientific way of saying, yeah, we don't really know.
Correct. We don't know. And that's what we're really trying to find out more and more about, what does cause it. And that's just so we can get a better understanding.
Yeah, absolutely. Wow, how interesting. Okay, so I mentioned this earlier. I love that you talk about openly what speech therapy looked like when you were a child and the things that you were like, this is silly and actually not helping me whatsoever. So what did you feel like with your speech therapist, or maybe even not speech therapy? Let me rewind. What did you feel like worked the best? And what did you feel like just was a total waste of time as far as treatment went?
Oh, yeah, yeah. I love this question. I would definitely say, like, what definitely worked for me was like a play-based structure, because of course, as children, your attention bands are not fully developed and such. And it was very hard for me to keep on engaging within my session. So definitely doing a play-based approach where I was able to move around the room. I was able to enjoy the activities that we were doing. And just, you know, having a say, so having options, so like, would you like to do this or would you like to do that? Having those options, because something that definitely didn't work for me is when my SLPs would just kind of expect me to sit down at a table, not leave my chair, not fidget, not move. And there were a certain amount of drills and flashcards I had to say. Now, in the long-term outcome, I can treatment for the childhood apraxia of speech did help. But during those times, I was not able to be fully engaged within my session. And there were times where even if I did not appear as if I was checking out, I was checking out mentally because my brain was so overwhelmed because I was losing interest. Drills can be a lot of work. It can be a lot of work for people with childhood apraxia of speech to physically speak. So not being able to like have like any sort of amount of breaks or having that chance for just to have fun, because I was also a kid. I was never just a patient. I was a kid and I needed my full needs accounted for, rather than looking at, okay, we're here because we're going to target your childhood apraxia of speech. I wish that the focus would have more so been on, the focus is on your communication and you being happy. I wish that would have been the main focus point, because there were times where if I was not supposed to leave my chair and then I would get up out of my chair, like they would get mad. And it got into the point sometimes where I would hide under the SLP's table because I didn't feel safe. I mean, there wasn't an actual threat there, but as children, our nervous system, anytime it feels dysregulated, we sense a threat. And during those times, I just wanted to be left alone. So I wasn't able to build that meaningful relationship that I wish that also would have been more looked at and more established, rather than adults just expecting, because you're an adult, that means I'm supposed to automatically trust you. Because as children and as human beings, we get to choose who is a safe person and who is not a safe person. And to say, well, I'm the adult, and just taking that very broad statement and kind of taking that power dynamic charge, isn't going to make any child feel safe. If anything, they're going to feel like they don't have a voice, which that's the sole reason I was in sessions. They wanted me to have a voice, but the question kind of lingered in my brain. Is this actually about me having a voice, or is this about me physically talking?
Wow. And that makes, when you say that, you think, well, duh, of course. But I could totally see the adult not knowing much about this diagnosis, trying to work. But even thinking back without having a speech difference, as a child, I couldn't have sat at a table for 30 minutes or an hour straight just doing drills. Like, that's
No child, because you're a child. You want to play. You want to engage. I mean, I think it's, I don't think any child is made to sit at a seat for 30 minutes just because we're kids. I mean,
that is tough. Wow. Doing drill after drill, that's super tough. Yeah, I love that. That's such a good point to make. And I hope that therapists listening to this really take that into consideration. Like, you've got to develop that rapport and that communication. Oh, yeah. Yeah, that's so important.
Thank you.
I love that. Speaking of, what do you wish people as a whole, so maybe people listening to this conversation, what do you wish they knew about apraxia?
I feel that the main thing I wish that people knew about apraxia, other than, of course, the clinical definition and such, and all of the misconceptions that can come along with apraxia, the one thing I wish people did know about apraxia is that it's not something that you need to get rid of, or something that the aim should be to quote unquote cure it, because it's not the common cold. It's not a flu. It's nothing like that. This is with in itself, with being a neurological speech difference. It's how our brain is made. And that is not our, that's not within our control. So this isn't within the child or the person's control. It's not something that you can cure. There's no cure for apraxia. And I would argue personally that there doesn't need to be a cure for apraxia, because I find that when we start putting the goal to be a cure or to get rid of, we're not actually appreciating the child or the person for who they are within that moment. And we're also not taking into account as well that I feel like one of the greatest, I personally feel like one of the greatest gifts that you can give a person is by accepting them for who they are and whatever makes them them. So I wish that the main thing I wish people knew is that it's not within our control. And that means that it's something that we're going to have to learn to accept and something that we're going to have to work on. And that's why I went to speech services as a child and as an adult. And that's why I advocate so heavily for speech services. But the second thing that I do wish that people knew is that when we start to aim the focus as a cure or something that they will outgrow, which is completely false, that's not the case, we're not actually accepting the person fully for who they are. And the effects of that long term for anybody who doesn't feel accepted for who they are or feels like they need to mask a certain portion of themselves so people can accept them or love them can be incredibly hard and can be very impacting psychologically. So I find that there needs to be just a very huge acceptance portion, not only with childhood apraxia of speech, but I believe with disabilities in general and anybody that makes anything that makes anybody different or who they are.
Yeah, absolutely. You'd be surprised how many people I have come on this podcast and say, I wouldn't change what I have. I just wish people would accept it more, which is really cool. And I wish people would see it that way. It's not, we should cure what's different about you. It should be, no, we're all different and let's just be accepting. So that's a really great way to word that. So you talk about being a child and how childhood was probably pretty hard. And I feel like even being an adult, you're always explaining yourself and you're always having to be on your best behavior and sometimes even feel like you have to mask part of yourself. So I always like to ask people, what does self-care look like? So what does Jordan do to make him feel better?
Oh, that's a good question. And that's a question I'm trying to figure out to this day as well. I feel like one of my biggest forms of self-care is really by... there's a few different things. So typically just really being sure that I'm in tune with myself and I'm in tune with my needs and just being sure that I'm taking care of my needs within every moment and every day, and also being non-judgmental about my needs or who I am. So really practicing being non-judgmental with myself, because we can say that, oh, no, you shouldn't judge other people. And that's something that I do personally believe as well. But nobody's there to kind of stop the voice inside of our own heads that nobody hears, that if a friend of yours heard, they would like beat you up because they would be like, you're not allowed to talk to yourself this way. So just really being sure that I'm in tune with myself, with my needs and how I'm thinking and how I'm feeling. I would definitely say too, I love meditation. I love to do a lot of grounding within my day. And two, I just love being with my dogs. I love just spending time with my dogs, just lying on my couch whenever I need to. And just basically, I feel like with self-care as a whole, I feel like there's been a really popular, I feel like there's been a very popular trend within the media that self-care is like shopping and, you know, spa days and these different things. And that can be self-care because you are taking care of your needs. You might need clothes. It will make you feel well. So absolutely. But something I've had to learn about self-care myself is that really self-care at its core is that you're taking care of yourself and you're taking care of your needs. So that's why I will check in frequently, like, have I ate? Have I drank enough water? Do I need electrolytes? Am I tired? Do I need to lay down for a minute? Am I overworking myself? Do I need to take an hour break? Anything like that. So it never builds up past a point where I'm like, I'm done. And I want to lock myself in my room for 12 hours and not come out and talk to a single person, because that has definitely happened.
I feel that deep in my soul. It's wild to me, but I'm the same way. I have to check in with myself, which is crazy because you feel like you would know your body best, but it takes a lot of work to learn yourself.
There's so many different types of distractions as well that we have within our current world and such. And I do find that we are glued to our phones a little bit more. So I feel like when you're so focused on one thing, that you're only up here, but you're not fully present. So that's why I love to ground myself, because I can really tell, like, how does my body feel? Yeah, so absolutely.
I think that is a perfect way to work. We're so worried about staring at a screen and comparing. We kind of forget to look inward. Absolutely. As an adult, where do you feel like you find the most support for yourself? Not even just for apraxia, but maybe for apraxia, maybe just where do you feel most at home and where do you find the most support from people?
I definitely feel the most support from my community and being able to connect. And I definitely feel that from my friends as well, as I have very great, great friends who I can talk openly to and call it any time. So I've really found, and something I personally found as an adult, is that I used to think that the bulk of the support would always come from your family. But I feel like as I've grown up, I've personally have found that family is not just blood, but those who do accept you and love you for who you are. And we cannot choose our family, but something we can choose is our chosen family. So with those people, I make sure I hold them close. I check in on them as well. And I feel like just having that connection and just knowing that there's people there is really the support personally I need, because we are social beings and human beings need other human beings. Like, we're a pack when it comes to the basic science of it all. So just surrounding myself with people and just being able to have those conversations with people, even if I'm not seeking support, but just knowing that I have that support there can really give me that blanket that I need to feel safe.
Yeah, absolutely. I couldn't have worded that better. That was perfect. I love it. Jordan, thank you so, so much for joining us. It's been such a pleasure.
It is. Thank you so much for having me. I greatly enjoyed our discussion.
Absolutely. It is such a pleasure. If you're listening to this podcast, you can't see Jordan. You have like the most beautiful smile. It's like, it's literally perfect. I'm looking at your teeth like, are those even real? They're perfect.
These are real. I wore braces twice. I will tell people that. So please don't think that my teeth are naturally this way, which I'm really wanting to get them wider and wider as I possibly can. So I'm not even fully happy, but thank you so much for the compliment. I don't know how to take a compliment at times. Thank you.
Well, it's perfect. You've got a beautiful smile. For people that are just listening, I wanted them to know that, but it has been a pleasure. Okay, so my listeners know how this works. As far as the podcast goes, we're going to log off. If you want to hear the rest of the conversation with Jordan, we're going to hop on and do some extra questions like I do every interview for my patrons. And that's how we keep this going. So if you want to help support this and you want to get some behind the scenes and exclusive questions, log on to patreon.com/TownsendTMusic. We're going to head over there. If not, we will catch you next time.
If you'd like to hear the rest of this interview, visit patreon.com/TownsendTMusic. And don't forget, you can also watch the interviews on our YouTube channel at Townsend T Music YouTube.
If you're looking to buy or sell, I have the perfect realty company for you. Clark & Co. Realty is located in the Benton, Bryant, Arkansas area. And they understand that buying or selling a home is more than just a transaction. It's a life-changing experience. That's why their team of highly seasoned real estate professionals is dedicated to providing exceptional, personalized services for all their clients. They truly take great pride in the relationships they build, and they always work relentlessly on the client's behalf to help them achieve their perfect real estate goals. They always have the client in mind, and I can speak firsthand when I say how reliable, trustworthy, and quick they were. When I was looking to buy my first home, they were there with me every step of the way, answering every question I could think of. They showed me a great amount of knowledge and patience through the process. It's no wonder they've won so many awards for their outstanding services and their excellent relationships with clients. So if you're looking to buy or sell, there is no better option than Clark & Co. Realty.